When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Allo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everyone, to Couch Potato Diary. Happy Thursday. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for tuning in today. We're going to cover the NHL playoff races. We got some NBA talk on here as well, and then we're going to close the show with a whole lot on the UFC as we get ready for UFC 300 this weekend. So that is kind of what's coming up on the show today. We are going to start, though, with some basketball talk, and specifically the Denver Nuggets and their former and future MVP making an absolute statement last night. All right, so the Denver Nuggets took a stranglehold of the Western Conference last night with a victory over the Minnesota Timberwolves in what was a really entertaining and really, really good basketball game. Very well played on both sides, and it was close most of the way. I think at one point, either third or fourth quarter, Denver's biggest lead was 4, and then they just absolutely piled it on late. And this was, not that he needs it, not that, that there is a requirement or any doubt as to who is going to win MVP, but this was a statement from Nikola Jokic. And in a broader term, the Denver Nuggets last night. But this was Jokic being like, look, this is cute, you guys want to finish first, and you might still. And it's cute, like, oh, best defensive team in the league and how, doesn't matter. I'm going to miss more free throws than I'm going to miss field goals in this game. He was tremendous. And it's like, if we came on here and did a show every time Jokic was tremendous, then it would just be, that this would end up just being a Nuggets podcast. But the way that he was able to just take over in that fourth quarter, allowing the Nuggets to really take over, because there was a lot of this game was played with Minnesota being out in front and the Nuggets really chasing things. But Jokic in the fourth quarter was like, you know what? Let's just win. You know, and I kind of said this yesterday about SGA being like, yeah, we're not going to lose this game. Jokic is like, well, that's cute. I'm going to show you guys why I'm the best player in the world, why this is still the best team in the league, and why anyone considering taking our throne needs to apologize, because it was so impressive what he was able to do. Obviously, his distribution is elite, right? Like, the offense runs through him. And how he is able to play make, his shooting ability, and all of it. And what really impressed me was Denver was able to take Minnesota out of the game plan that they wanted. Early on, it was very clear they wanted Naz Reid on Jokic and have Gobert be on Gordon and kind of act as a bit of a center fielder and a guy out in the middle just like, yeah, well, I'll take care of anything that is coming to the rim. And Minnesota's defense was incredible in this game. We'll get to that in a little bit. But then Denver was able to get Reed in a little bit of foul trouble, and that forced Gobert to get onto Jokic. And then immediately, I don't know if Jokic had another paint touch, at least a possession that started with him in the paint, the rest of the game, because he knew Gobert wasn't comfortable coming out to the three-point line, so Jokic lived out of the three-point line. And there was a couple times early in the game, Gobert would get on him and kind of back off a little bit, 3 immediately. It's just like, he is a computer program. Like, it's what you learn in computer science in at like a grade 9 level. If this, then this, or if yes, then this, if no, then this. He is so, like, immediately, as soon as he sees, okay, this is there, then that's there. This is here, then that's going to be there. Like, it's just, it's automatic for him. His basketball IQ is extraordinary, legendary even, how he is able to read things and execute so well. And it's okay, well, Gobert's gonna back off immediately, three, and it goes in. Gobert's gonna come up on me, all right, I'm gonna try to drive, or that means the paint is open, let's pass it to a cutting MPJ and let's get a basket that way. And they were able to really take Minnesota out of their game plan and really for the first time make Minnesota look a little discombobulated on the defensive side of the court. And that is a very difficult thing to do against one of the better defensive teams in the league. And also, like, I don't think Malone gets enough credit for how well he has coached this team up. There was just such an exceptional play that really kind of put a seal in this one. Brown late was just like a highlight reel, putting up some incredible possessions that helped win them this game. But they had a play where it was like, Jokic is at the top, Murray is screening Murray is screening for Brown, it was Brown is screening for Murray, and Murray kind of circles around it and goes back behind Jokic. So they're using Jokic as another screen. The two defenders are going to go double off of that and just try, we're going to have three guys on these two dudes, and left Brown wide open on a cut down low, quick up, basket, boom. He threw it down with great vigor, and at that point, it was over, and they were just basically toying with them. But this was such an incredible fourth quarter that Jokic would just go at Gobert, the top defender in the league, guy who's probably going to win defensive player of the year, and just absolutely eat him up in that fourth quarter. If Gobert was on him and covering him tight, he was just driving at him. No one does that against Rudy Gobert, and a lot of them were going in, and then he was getting fouls. And I think he got the benefit of a few whistles in that game for sure, but he's the best player in the world, and he's going right at this guy and putting the referees in that position to have to make a decision. So I was just, it's, again, you know what it is, but I was so impressed with what we saw from Jokic last night. And you know what? Murray was pretty strong there as well. They had him on a minutes restriction, and so there was concern about the non-Jokic and Murray minutes, and they actually extended the lead in both of those. And that was an absolute failing by Minnesota, which again, we'll get to in a second here. But for Murray, like, he is so good shooting off the dribble, and he is such a great complementary piece with Jokic. They just have a phenomenal chemistry and an understanding of where they are at all times in this game. And it's such a delight to watch. And I think Murray being out there with the bench units when Jokic is resting is going to be, again, some very important minutes for Denver, but I think Murray's scoring ability, it's going to give them the edge in those. For Minnesota, this was a game that they looked really, really good in for most of it, and then it just fell apart late. And you can certainly make reasons for that. They're coming off of a back-to-back, Denver was too, but you're coming off of a back-to-back, they get into Denver late, and it's fucking Denver. So mile high air and all of that. So they definitely wore down there. But for three quarters, it was a delight watching them defend. They had Denver in all sorts of knots with turning the ball over and forcing Denver into a lot of mistakes that you just don't see this team make. And like, Gobert has such an ability when he is doubling off of someone, he still comes to the ball in a way where he stays in the passing lane the whole way. And it's so incredible to watch. And it feels like they have eight guys out there, because they'll go double a guy, and then you think, okay, well, I got this pass and the rotation's already there. So, okay, well, then this one and the rotation's already there. Like, their ability to read out on the floor and their execution, obviously along with the athleticism that it takes to just be everywhere at all times, it was smothering for Denver at times. And so that's why it felt like Denver was really playing catch up in this game. But I thought where Minnesota really lost it was in the non-Jokic minutes, where normally that they sat on the broadcast, when Jokic is out on the floor, he and the Nuggets are plus 12 per game. And when he's not on the floor, they're minus 9. And in this game, I think both instances with Jokic off the floor, the Nuggets actually gained some points. And that was such a big deal because that was your real opportunity. It was basically, it was Gordon and the bench that what was out there. And Gordon wasn't doing anything in this game. Gobert basically took him out. But this was a real missed opportunity when it's Gordon and like Watson who's blocking everything. So offensively, Minnesota can't get anything going. But Denver was making some shots in some big moments. Reggie Jackson didn't play a particularly good game either, and they still could not take advantage of those non-Jokic minutes. And then where it really lost them, their half-court offense just bogged down in the fourth quarter. And some of that could be fatigue for sure coming off of the back-to-back. But this one, and I think he's incredibly talented, but this one's a little bit on Anthony Edwards. He was silent in that fourth quarter. And this is where they miss Towns, right? Because that is an offensive presence that I think would help them out in that fourth quarter as well. And this was quite a bit of adversity for Minnesota. And really the only one going offensively for them was Mike Conley, who can be a very good complimentary piece. But when he is the focal point of the offense, that becomes a problem. And that's what it was in this game. Edwards couldn't get anything going in the fourth quarter. Gobert, that's just not his game. And so when Edwards isn't going, this offense really does kind of slow down. So if this is the Western Conference Final, it's going to be a blast because Minnesota played a hell of a basketball game and just fell apart a little bit late and didn't have Towns. He would presumably be back by the time these two teams would face off in the postseason. But this was a ton of fun and an absolute statement win for the Denver Nuggets, who are now in the driver's seat again for top spot in the Western Conference. All right, that's it from the NBA. Slower night in the NHL, but one big story standing out that could shift some things a little bit. Let's talk about it. So the main headline in the NHL was not on the ice yesterday. It was off of it, as it sounds like the Arizona Coyotes could be on their way to Salt Lake City. There are reports that players are being informed. There are reports that the league is making a couple of schedules, one with, one without Arizona, or one with Arizona, one with Salt Lake City. This is just a really, really unfortunate story. And first and foremost, you feel awful for the players, the staff, and the fans. For the players, like, this is, you don't know, are you going to be in Arizona or Salt Lake City next year? That's a bit of a change when you have families that are there and kids and all of that. For the staff, obviously, like, there are, you know, and not like the front office staff and hockey ops, but like the ticket takers and the popcorn and the all of those sorts of people who work there and rely on these Coyotes games to help improve their living. That sucks that this is all up in the air and it has to be tough. And I know like the reporters are just doing their job and no shade to them even a little bit, but it sucks to be reading all of this through the media and not really knowing what's going on, but having everything seem like it's going badly. So you feel for all of them. And then the fans to have, if you are a loyal Arizona Coyote fan, to have to deal with all of this would just be a remarkable amount of bullshit. So that's really unfortunate as well. When it comes to this topic, I have always felt like a bit of kind of an obnoxious elitist when it comes to the Arizona Coyotes, because like cute and fun and all of that has its point, has its place, but it also has its limit. And that's Mullet Arena right now. Like it's, oh, look at this. It's a college atmosphere. Oh, this is going to be great. Over it. It went from being cute to being embarrassing very quickly. There should be barriers of entry for owning a National Hockey League team. And one of them is a fucking hockey rink. And that holds a suitable amount of people for a professional hockey team. That's not Mullet Arena. It's cute. It's fun. It's a great college atmosphere. All of those things, sure. But averaging 3,000 fans a game is pathetic. You can't be doing that. And again, this isn't shitting on the fans or anything like that. This is 100% ownership fucking this thing up. And again, it's not even like, oh, Arizona should have paid for an arena for this hockey team. No. I'm not about that either. If you can't afford or can't make it work to get an actual professional arena in your city, then sorry, you don't get your team anymore. And I'm talking to the owner. You don't get to be the owner of an NHL team if you can't make it work to have an actual, up to certain standards, hockey arena for your team. And so It sucks that it comes at the expense of so many people, but this ownership group doesn't deserve to have the Arizona Coyotes if they can't get the arena thing figured out. And mullet should have only been a one-year thing, and then something else was planned. It shouldn't be a two-year plan, and then hope an auction goes our way, and then maybe we'll see. None of that should be a part of this process. So it's the same thing with, like, the Oakland A's. Like, well, we can't really afford anything right now. Okay, well, then you shouldn't have a baseball team. Right? Like, you don't just get to have a team because you put owner on the thing. At some point when you are owning this team, it's not just so you get to own this team. It's you have to be responsible for the things that go into making this an actual professional baseball team. For Oakland and some other teams in Major League Baseball, it's affording actual talent. And for Arizona, it's having a building for that talent to be talented in. And if they can't get that, then they don't deserve to have that team. So it sucks for the people of Arizona who support this team. It sucks for the people who rely on this team. But it really does feel like this is the end out in Arizona. All right, the rest of the show is going to be focusing on the world of mixed martial arts. Have a few things to run through on this one. We will start, though, with some rankings talk going into UFC 300. UFC 300 features a couple title fights, including Zhang Wei Li defending her title against Yan Xiaonan. And so this was the time I thought, I've done this for the guys, I thought it was time to roll it out for the female MMA pound-for-pound rankings, both of all time and current ranking. We'll start with the today. Honorable mention to Macy Barber, who has been putting on a show and coming up with some big wins. Number 10 is Tatiana Suarez for me. She is so, so good. And so talented, and injuries have derailed her, and she probably honestly doesn't deserve to be on this list, but she might be the most or second most talented women's fighter in the sport today, and just can't stay in the cage long enough to be able to prove it. But I just, with that talent, I had to put her in at number 10. Coming in at number 9, it is Rose Namajunas. Again, a legendary career, has had some ups and downs in the last little bit, but I do believe still has the resume to be good enough to get on here. At 8, it's Erin Blanchfield. She comes off of a really difficult loss a couple of weeks ago at the Ultimate Fight Night card, but she has had some major wins and is on the rise, so she deserves to be on this list. The title challenger at UFC 300, Yao Xiaonan, is up next at number 7. At 6, Rocky Pennington, coming off of a championship win, so she gets on this list. Our top 5, Juliana Pena, comes in at number 5. She beat Amanda Nunes, then got absolutely shit-whipped by Amanda Nunes, but still, a win over the GOAT gets you, spoiler alert, a win over the GOAT gets you into the top 5, I think. Mauro Fiano is up next, and I know I pronounced that wrong, but she just came off of a win over Erin Blanchfield, and so when you beat someone in the top 10, you get to move pretty high up in the top 10. Coming in at number 3, it is Valentina Shevchenko. Among active fighters, she has the best resume. It is not close. And when she is on her game, she is still the most talented fighter in the sport on the women's side and amongst the most talented overall. At 2, it is Zhang Wei Li. She is one of the current champions right now. And at number 1, she beat Valentina Shevchenko twice. So she's got to stay in that number 1 spot. It is Alexa Grasso. So those are my top 10 rankings for female mixed martial arts pound for pound today. What about all time? Coming in at number 10, it is Carla Esparza, multiple time champion, and kind of felt like the sport had passed her by and her skill set by a little bit, and then was able to rebound, earn another championship fight, and win that championship fight. So, for proving all of us wrong, she comes in at number 10. At 9, it is Alexa Grasso. She has 2 wins over someone who is, spoiler alert, in the top 5 on this list. And so she has to make this list. At number 8, it is Miesha Tate, one of the pioneers who I think, again, bridged a little bit into this modern era, but not far enough to get higher up on the list. At 7, it's Rose Namajunas. One of the, like, talent-wise, exceptional. Some marquee wins as well, but just a couple big losses that has her a little bit further down on this list. At six, it's Holly Holm. Part of it is for the impact that she has had throughout all of combat sports. And when we're looking at the resume for her, she has beat a couple of fighters on this list. At five, Valentina Shevchenko. What she has done in her own weight class is tremendous, but a couple of losses to Nama Yunus, or sorry, Amanda Nunes keeps her a little bit further down. At four, I have Ronda Rousey. Very clearly the most important fighter on this list for women's mixed martial art, what she was able to do in getting the Ultimate Fighting Championship to buy into female mixed martial arts, which seems wild to say now, but that was a thing they needed to do. The fact that she was able to do that was great. Did not evolve with the times, certainly. But I do believe that just based on the impact, she has to be in the top half of this list. At three, it's Cyborg. No one was more unstoppable than her in her time. And it is too bad that a lot of her prime was wasted in either subpar organizations or in contract negotiations. At two, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, one of the more unbelievable title runs that you will have in the sport. Her all-around ability was second to none, and her dominance was second to only one. And at number one, there is no doubt who the female GOAT is in mixed martial arts, and that is Amanda Nunes. Just unstoppable, has a bit of a slip on a banana peel moment against Juliana Pena, comes back, beats that ass, and then comes up with another victory here. And you look at it, she has win over Ronda, win over Shevchenko. Like, she has beat people in the top, two people in the top five on this list. So she has to be at number one. There is no doubt in my mind that she is number one, all-time pound for pound for the UFC. An interesting exercise here. This was actually a whole lot of fun to do. I had a comment on one of my videos here as we've been previewing. I want to get the name right. It was Aquabat 104 commented on our non-main event fighters preview. Very good idea. I have not watched, very good video. I have not watched MMA in years. Can you tell me some good recent fights I should watch? And so I went back. I used the cutoff of UFC 250 because that was just a little bit pre-pandemic. But that feels like kind of a modern era-ish area for just leading into this specific fight. And it's also not far, like, oh, well, did you see the fight in 2010? Like he said recently, right? So, or they said recently. So I thought UFC 250 to now, it's a 4-year span. That's a pretty good window for recently. So we've come up with 15 fight/rivalries that have kind of defined the last 4 years and a bit of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Starting first, it is UFC 254, Khabib against Justin Gaethje. This was Khabib's last fight. It was him kind of just showing that dominance that he had as the lightweight champion. He rides off into the sunset. And so I think this is good to kind of show, A, how close Gaethje got leading into UFC 300 now, defending his BMF title, but also to show just kind of the final send-off to that era in the lightweight division. After that, this one I thought was going to be honorable mention, but it stays on the list. It's Max Holloway against Calvin Kattar from the UFC on ABC, January 16th, I believe 2021. Either way, this is a time where, or this is a fight that shows just absolute mastery by Max Holloway and what he was able to do. This is one of the more profound beatdowns that you will see, and it's just, it is a clinical mixed martial arts performance and is so beautiful in its disaster that I think you absolutely have to watch this one. Up next, it is the second fight in the trilogy between Poirier and McGregor. This was just so, like, oh my goodness, out of nowhere. And I think it starts what is kind of the defining part of Conor's legacy in this UFC 250 to 300 era, I suppose. And that is showing that Conor McGregor kind of isn't a part of these things. So that is, I think kind of important, like when you go through, and sorry, I got my dates wrong. UFC 250 was at the UFC Apex in June of 2020. So my apologies for getting that wrong. But these are like kind of early pandemic to now. But yeah, McGregor has not really been a part of the UFC story for the last 4 years. And this fight is kind of a big reason why, and starts a bit of a spiral in the career, fighting-wise, of Conor McGregor. Obviously, he's in a movie right now. He's probably doing fine. UFC 260, Francis Ngannou against Stipe Miocic. The definitive heavyweight of this last little bit has been Francis Ngannou. And the definitive fight for him was against Stipe Miocic. If you want to go back further, Miocic against Cormier, UFC 241, an incredible comeback. He comes back to win the heavyweight championship there. But Ngannou and Miocic is just such an intriguing fight, showing the growth of Ngannou, who, all due respect to Jon Jones, who maybe doesn't deserve a whole lot of respect given some of the allegations that we heard about him. But Ngannou is the definitive heavyweight of this era for the Ultimate Fighting Championship and for mixed martial arts just in general, because he's not in the UFC anymore. But I do think that defines part of it. UFC 274. Michael Chandler against Tony Ferguson. This was really the end of the Tony Ferguson era. So we're talking about ushering in a new era in the lightweight division. Michael Chandler, who is front and center in a lot of stuff right now, he gets an epic knockout. So I think that's an important one to go back and watch. And then I've cheated with these two to get to 15. Edwards Usman at UFC 278 and UFC 286. This was like the end of UFC 278. Is so bananas in how Edwards was able to pull that off and then really establish himself as the new king in the welterweight division at UFC 286. I think that was very important. Speaking of establishing yourself, we are currently in the Islam Makhachev era in the lightweight division, and UFC 280 started that in his fight against Charles Oliveira. So that would be one to go back and see, like, this is the dude, maybe even in the sport right now, this is the guy. UFC 281 and 87, the second and third fights in the Pereira Adesanya trilogy, I think it kind of shows where Pereira has been, and it also shows how it also includes Israel Adesanya and a win for Izzy, who I think has been so important in this stretch of mixed martial arts and the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Moreno against Figueiredo, UFC 283. It's the only rivalry to go four fights, so you have to see the fourth one and see how that one concludes. Then we got Makhachev against Volkanovski. These are the two pound-for-pound kings in the UFC and in all of mixed martial arts, and they fought twice in the span of a year, UFC 284 and UFC 294, so I think that's important. Going back to our female pound-for-pound list, Alexa Grasso against Valentina Shevchenko, UFC 285, to just see the enormity of that particular bout. UFC 292, Sean O'Malley against Aljamain Sterling. We have entered the O'Malley era. And so those are kind of the fights that I was looking to pinpoint, is like, what eras are ending? What eras are beginning? What kind of, like, we're talking like different chapters in the history of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. I think we are in the Sean O'Malley chapter right now. UFC 292 proved that. UFC 295, another Pereira fight as he fights Yuri Prohachka for the light heavyweight championship. The meteoric rise of Pereira, who is now main eventing UFC 300. It is incredible to watch. And it's been such a delight to follow his career in this little bit. Dricus du Plessis against Sean Strickland. Just because I feel like du Plessis against Israel Adesanya is going to be the next great rivalry at middleweight, to see how it kind of all starts with du Plessis, I think is important. And then the last one, just a couple ago, Topuria beats Volkanovski at UFC 298. Ilya Topuria feels like the next one at 145 pounds. And so you get to see how he transforms into that in a tremendous performance at UFC 298. So those are the 15 fights that I think define this era of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Lastly, just a couple fight announcements here over the last little bit. UFC 300 gets Andre Feely against Cub Swanson. Feely 2-2 in his last four, while Swanson 1-4 in his last five. But a couple old school violence guys. This should be a really interesting fight at UFC 303, which is a little slim on fights right now. Ultimate Fight Night card is getting Andre Arlovsky against Martin Bude. Apologies for screwing that up. The reason it's important is this is Arlovsky's 42nd UFC fight, which would put him two behind Jim Miller, assuming Miller makes weight coming up tomorrow, for the record for most fights in UFC history. For reference, the UFC has had 703 cards, which would mean that Arlovsky has been on 5% of them, which is absurd. So, congratulations to Arlovsky. Budai coming off of his first loss in the promotion that ended a 12-fight winning streak. And Vivian Araújo taking on Yasmin Yastavicius at Ultimate Fight Night on July 13th. Araújo has lost 3 of 4. Jazz has won 3 of 4, coming off of just an epic beatdown on the show here in Canada. So, that is those are some of the fights that are coming up. Coming up tomorrow on the show, it is a full UFC 300 preview. We will break down the card in its entirety. I am so excited to get ready for this one. Also, we're going to book the WWE all the way to WrestleMania 41. Coming off of the high that was WrestleMania 40, let's see where I think the promotion will be in a year. That's going to be on a Fightin' Friday coming up for all of you tomorrow. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Follow me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm at PrimetimeKlein, twitch.tv/PrimetimePK, and you can email the show couchpotatodiary@yahoo.com. Make sure that if you're listening in podcast form, you leave a review and you subscribe. And if you're watching, make sure you subscribe, like, and leave a comment. Thank you guys so much. My dog's barking. I gotta go deal with that. I'll talk to y'all later. I'm out.